so if you guys got your Bibles, I want to talk to you guys about the book of Ruth. Now, Ruth is super cool. To be honest, I used to not like the book of Ruth. And this was like fairly recently, which is pretty bad for a pastor to say that. But it's because I didn't understand it. I never really got into it. But then all of a sudden, I began to dive into this little tiny book, which is really cool. If you want to check out everything we're talking about today, on the way home, you could listen to the whole book of Ruth on the way home. Just hit up an audio Bible, 15, 20 minutes, depending on how fast the dude is talking, and you're good to go. And it's like such a neat story. If you like juicy gossip, or if you like novellas, then hey, Ruth is the book for you, brother man. Because it's pretty good. So I want to talk to you guys about the book of Ruth because I always figure if I have enough conversations about something, it must be time to talk about it. Or I figure if I ask myself in prayer the same question time and time again, it must be time to talk about it. God's kind of funny that way. So I want to talk about the will of God for my life and for your life. I want to talk to you guys about how to understand this. Because the will of God is a funny thing. It's a funny thing in several different ways. Because we all want to know it, but we don't always recognize it. Right? It's one of those things that we often ask people about. When it comes down to making decisions, it can be really hard, right? If you've ever gotten into, for everybody in a relationship who's ever been in a relationship, you understand this. The question comes up, where do you want to eat? I don't know. Where do you want to eat? I don't know. Where do you want to eat? Well, wherever you want to eat. Wherever you want to eat would be fine. You want a burger? Yeah, sure. How about pasta? That sounds good too. That sounds good too. Chinese? Yeah. Seafood? No, never seafood. It's never seafood unless it's like sushi, a good sushi. But it's so stinking annoying. And I figure if you're a woman in this room, then you're just like, make a decision. You're the head of the house. Come on, right? The other day this happened to me and it's difficult. The pressure's on because we're actually in the car driving in a direction. Where do you want to go? And it's like, and you just have to start making rights and lefts, right? So it's like the time bomb's ticking. You know, you have 5 seconds to make a decision. Right, left, right, left, right, left, left, left! So it's funny because we can't even pick where you want to eat for lunch. And I'm responsible for 3 children. Thank God, I think you made a mistake, right? I don't even know if I can handle a dog, okay? So we find ourselves in these situations where sometimes from small to big decisions are really difficult to make. And we all want to please God. We all want to do God's will. And then we get scared because we don't want to be out of God's will. So what if we go and eat at Farmer Boy's? I had a bad experience. If you like it, it's cool. When God really wanted us to go to Famous Dave's, okay? I mean, what if we miss it, right? Like, it would be the worst. And we can trip ourselves up. Now, you can know the will of God. 1 Thessalonians 5:16 and 17:18, it says, this is the will of God. Plain simple, and it makes these statements, you know. In James, it says, if you don't know, then ask, and he'll tell you. Jeremiah 33:3, call on God, and he'll tell you what you don't know. Like it's simple. The Bible's pretty plain. Like, God wants you to know his will, so it shouldn't be this difficult, right? And a lot of times what happens is we get real spooky about God's will. Like, I like to use this word, superstitious, right? Like, we're waiting for the sign, the voice. We're waiting for the move of the Lord today. And I don't know, man. God is supernatural, right? God's supernatural. It says he made the invisible and then he made the visible. So God's perfectly comfortable in both spaces. But the problem is we always try to get the invisible peace when we're living in the visible peace. We try to only make God super, and we forget the natural part. You see, you can't just get super because you're natural. So you need both pieces. So we end up missing God's will when we're only looking for half of the equation. Some people, you listen to them talk, and I believe them because I like trust them and stuff, you know? And you hear them talk about the way God talks to them and you think, I want to be there. And after 20 some odd years of doing this God thing, I'm just not there. And it's kind of scary because once they start calling you Pastor so-and-so, you're like, when is this going to happen? Right? And I'm still waiting, you know? And the problem with all of us is we start asking questions like, am I missing it? What am I doing wrong? And I've come to this conclusion in my life, is that sometimes you're a Moses and sometimes you're a Ruth. And Moses is cool because it's like, he's just chilling and then God shows up like in the flesh. And it's like, well, of course he parted the Red Sea because like that happens. Or he's just walking through doing his day job and boom, stuff starts catching on fire and talking to him. Like, that's awesome. And I've heard those stories before, but in my life, I don't think I'm a Moses. Because when things catch on fire in front of me, it's usually a bad thing. Not a good thing. But then this really cool story of Ruth comes along. And I'm like, I don't have any identity issues, but I think I'm a Ruth, you know? I think I'm a Ruth. And you can complain afterwards. It's okay. But I feel like that's my life. Because nowhere in the book of Ruth, all four chapters, every verse, nowhere will you find quotation marks around anything that's said by God. The only people talking are people. You'll find God's name 3-4 times in it, but that's about it. And all the miracles that happen within the book of Ruth, you miss them unless you're looking for them. Because it's a very natural book. And all the super in it is in the background. And I kind of feel like me and Ruth, like we'd be friends, like we'd have a cool conversation if one day when we get up to heaven, because I feel like that's my life. I've never heard the voice of God, and I feel like I live a very normal life, but I find myself blessed, and I think that's because I've always taken God's will in my life. And maybe if you've talked to me, maybe you've heard me say stuff like this before, and that's okay, because you're going to hear it again. But I've always followed the breadcrumbs in life. See, in my life, I feel like it's led oftentimes step by step, piece by piece, assignment by assignment. I've always made it a point to, when I pray, I just do whatever God puts in front of me. And the funny thing is, when I finish it, there's something else waiting for me. So I do that. And then at the end of that, it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll do this. And it's very natural, very normal. And I know it's not, maybe, I don't know if it preaches well or not. We'll find out. But it's the way I've lived my life. And the funny thing is that I've found that God loves to work in coincidence. Because on our end, it's a coincidence. But when you peel back the layer and you look at the super part of it, it's always a divine appointment. Because what coincidence to us is a divine setup from the very beginning of time on God's end. We only see our half of it. And I think you know what it's like. You make the turn at just the right time, or you just so happen to bump into that person you haven't seen in a long time. Or there's just more to this whole story of your life than what you can see. The Bible tells us that the invisible is more real than the visible. So it makes sense that when the visible just so happens to line up just right, that it's set up by something that you cannot see. And the funny thing is, as you read, listen to whatever, look at the book of Ruth. When you pay attention to it, it takes a really nice story and it turns into this interwoven miracle of God just kind of pushing people to the right pushing people to the left, moving them on a little bit further and faster and slowing them down just a little bit to where everything seems to fit in its place. And I found that when I'm content with that, I'm disappointed a lot less. In my walk with God, in my worship experiences, I've found that God's desire is to work in the normal as much as he desires to work in the super. And I've learned to accept both as from God's hand. You see, what happens is when we forget that we're active participants in God's will, then we sit back and we try to be passive passengers in God's plan. You see, from the beginning of time, God never desired to do everything alone. I mean, he could. He totally could, like, because he's God. And, like, the second you realize that God does not need you, it takes a lot of pressure off. But the funny thing is that even though God can do it all, he's chosen not to. And he's chosen to ask you to take a ride with him. You know, it's okay. We say, well, God, what do you want to eat? But we forget that sometimes God says, I don't know, what do you want to eat? But God, certainly, Lord, from the very beginning of a time, this part and this point was ordained. You know what I want to eat before even I know what I want to eat. Lord, speak, your servant is listening. What shall we have today? And of course, the answer is always a double-double. But that's when we get tripped up. I find the psalmist say, God says he desires to give you the desires of your heart. Oh. God says, Adam, name them whatever you want. And that's how you end up with like platypus, right? So some decisions are better than others. But we forget that God didn't make robots. He made family members. And there's times I say, Bella, my daughter, what do you want for dinner tonight? And whatever she wants is perfectly fine. She made dinner tonight, macaroni and cheese. I didn't eat it. The kids ate it. But, you know, very picky about my macaroni and cheese. But it was a partnership. And you see, Ruth shows us this as God puts breadcrumb after breadcrumb. So as we jump into this story, you've got to realize that because this is the way God operates in our life, don't get disappointed, because we can think, well, I should be there, or everybody else is, or I've been to so many weddings this year. When is, because if God's doing these things, then, and he's leading you these ways, then as long as you're in the will of God, you're not behind anybody. You're not ahead of the game, and you're not behind the game. You're not a late bloomer or an early bloomer. As long as you find yourself in the will of God, working, cooperating, honoring him, doing the thing, dealing with the breadcrumb he's put in front of you, then you're exactly where you need to be. You don't need to hurry up or slow down, because you're doing what God told you to be. And that thing that you, it just might be a season of being single, and that's cool. The reason you're still single right now is not because you're weird or ugly or strange or nobody likes you or it's just because you're just not done being single. So be really good at being single. And as soon as you're the best single person you've ever been to the honor and glory of God, well, you'll be done, and he'll give you the next breadcrumb, and he'll put a ring on it, and you'll be fine. Right? You're just still munching on that breadcrumb. You're not done yet. That's what it is. So don't be disappointed. And on the flip side, don't be paralyzed by this what do you want to eat game. I just don't know the will of God. Well, just make a decision. Like, just do it. Because if you're so stinking scared you don't do it, well, then you're going to miss it. And then you will be out of the will of God, right? better close than totally missed, right? I'll take a B over a D anytime. Because I know it's not always going to work right. So the book of Ruth, four chapters, starts off with this lady named Naomi. Naomi's married this dude. Don't need to get into his name. It's weird. And she has two kids. So it's nice. It's a four-person family. Hey, solid, right? American or Israelite dream? I don't know. So, but the problem is this, is that where they live is in this huge depression. A famine sweeps through the land. People are starving. No jobs. The king judge is obviously doing a terrible job with the economy. So they move. Really natural thing, right? Like, it's a totally natural thing to do. Well, I don't have a job. Let's go find a job. So they move. Now, they move to the east, to this place they probably shouldn't go. It's kind of jacked up. It's a place called Moab. It's the place you're not supposed to go. But Naomi and her husband and kids, they pack up and they go anyway. And her husband dies. Bummer. But the kids grow up and they get married to these foreign women, which back in the Old Testament was not a good idea. But that's okay, because the sons die. There's a lot. It's a really sad story, right? And the two sons that had passed away, Naomi's sons that had passed away, they'd married a woman named Orpah and Ruth. Oh, Ruth steps in the scene. She's this foreign woman. She's not a Jew. She doesn't believe in their God, all that kind of stuff. She's kind of from the wrong side of the tracks. And the sons that passed away married these two women. So Ruth says, well, I got the news. I saw on CNN that the famine's over. So my husband's passed away. My son's passed away. There's no way we can make any money. So I guess it's time to go. Let's pack up. She got that stick with the little bag at the end of it. And she begins to go back to Israel. And as she's leaving, she says to her daughters-in-law, she says, well, I got nothing for you. I got no more sons. I got no money. There's no way I can make a living. So you guys can go back because this is your land. So just go back and go back to your family. Maybe you can find another husband because you're still young. You don't have any kids yet. You're not tied down. So just go and live life. Well, Ruth is so blessed by her mother-in-law. Ruth says, you know what? I'm going to stay. I'm not going anywhere. Your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. Where you're going, there's jobs and there's money and you can make a living. And you know what? I know we're alone. I know it's crazy, but you know what? We're going to do this together because we're in this. We're a team, right? Bumping knuckles and everything. And they begin to go. It's funny. They're literally following the breadcrumbs, right? Because that's where the bread is. They're going in with it. Anyway, I thought it was witty. So they head back and they go back to Ruth's hometown. And everybody's super stoked. They're like, oh, my God. They're going to Naomi's hometown. They're like, Naomi's back. Naomi's back. Because everything was a little town back then. Everybody knew everybody's business. Oh, my gosh, Naomi. And Naomi's like, I don't know what you're excited about. My life sucks. She's like, I left rich and I came back broke. And this is like what Ruth is walking in. I don't even know what they were talking about on the way back. It must have been terrible because Naomi's kind of a Debbie Downer right now. And they go in and they decide, well, we don't have anybody to make money for us, so let's just go on welfare. And part of the welfare system was a thing called gleaning. Everybody had farms and stuff. And your job was to always leave a little bit behind for the poor folk. So Ruth goes out and she starts to pick the leftovers. It happens to be at this dude named Boaz's farm. And it's crazy because Boaz and Naomi are related. They're like part of this group, this big old family, this clan. So Ruth is just like, you know, getting her grub on. She's getting her food. She's walking around. And she ends up seeing Boaz. Boaz is like, hey, what's up? I heard about you. I heard about you. You rolled in with Naomi. You're that foreign chick, right? You know, she must have had an accent or something. But and he's like, you know what? She's good people. I've heard good things. You are like the raddest for sticking with her. So, you know, take whatever you want. And my guys, they'll make sure you're not going to be bugged. You're not going to be bothered. Any of that kind of stuff, you know. He's just an all around ace kind of guy, right? Just looking out for people. And she's doing that. She goes back and she's like. And Ruth's like, Naomi, 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 you would not believe what happened today. She's like, what happened? Boaz, 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 Boaz. And they're like, what's the big deal? She's like, I'm totally related to that guy. That's why he was so nice to me. I know. She's like, hey, stick with that dude. Listen to him, and let him take care of you. A couple months pass by, and then Naomi's like, hey, so what's up with Boaz? He's like, I heard there's a party coming up. Yeah, Boaz is throw this dope party. Oh my gosh. So he's like, hey, then here's what I want you to do. Get invited. I wear something nice. Do your hair. She's like, all right. And then at midnight, what? Yeah, at midnight when he falls asleep, go snuggle up to the dude. I'm going somewhere with this, okay? I'm going somewhere with this. So Ruth does the godly thing, listens to her mother-in-law, gets all did up, real purdy. Midnight, she finds Boaz, you know, just chilling, sleeping. And then she, like, scares him. She, like, starts to, like, look at his feet and stuff like that. And she's like, he's like, what's happening? You know, police. And he's like, who is that? It's like, it's Ruth. Ruth, what are you doing here? It's the middle of the night. And she's like, well, you know, hey, you're really nice. And I like you. And I was wondering if you like me. But, like, not just like, but like. And, like, is a good story, right? It's a good story. And you could correct me after you listen to it on the way home. I should probably just read this out of the Bible. Anyway, I apologize, Pastor Joe. Boaz. Boaz, he's like, hey, look. You're a woman of integrity. I'm a respectable dude. The entire town loves you, which is weird because nobody should love Moabites. That's like a no-no in the Bible. But she's that good. So he's like, look, we have one more relative that's closer to your mother-in-law. We got to check with him, keep everything above board, and let's see if he wants to be able to inherit your family. That's the way things worked back then because we got to keep things right. So Ruth leaves, tells mom-in-law, Naomi. Naomi's like, all right, that's the way we do it. Let's do this. So anyway, Boaz makes some deals. He works some things out. He makes it happen because Ruth must be some fine-looking chick. And eventually, people change chanclas. It's a thing. And Ruth and Boaz end up getting married. And it's crazy because their baby, their child ends up being like the grandfather of King David, who begins to change everything. And that's the miracle of the story, is that one coincidence led to another because of a decision they made, because they were trying to stay righteous, because of all these things. And I feel like that's my story. No burning bushes, no angels, no booming voices out of the sky. Just somebody doing their best to follow God the best they can, picking up one clue after the next. And that's where it all works. You see, and this is where you see the miracles in it all, because I'm gonna bring this to some place where you guys can get some stuff here. Is it all started when they had lack in their life? And see, we always see like, God, how come you're not blessing me? Or we think, God, if you were real, how come this would happen? But have we ever thought that God puts lack in our life to get us to move? The only reason Naomi met Ruth was because everybody was broke, because their town was practically going out of business. There was nothing. And the funny thing is this, is we always say, well, God's my provider. But the problem is that when we don't get the provision, we think that God's failed. But the thing is not that God has failed. He's just moved the provision to a different place. So whenever you find lack in your life, that's God nudging you and moving you to a different spot in life. And the problem is when we sit there and think, God, I'm here, I'm waiting for you to serve me so you can give me what I want and you can answer my prayers. But the problem is God said, I don't get it. I'm done with that. Why are you still hanging on? It's not me, it's you. I'm over here, so how about you come over here with me? You see, God provided the famine to move Naomi and her family to a place that he was. It was the last place you expected, but that's exactly where God moved them. So when you find lack in your life, when you find tension, problems in your life, you need to recognize that's a place where God's leading you to change. Now, he's either looking to change your location or he's asking you to change your activity, but one of those two things need to change. And if you know that God's called you this place, or if you're in a marriage and you know that, look, God's probably not calling you to leave your wife. I can pretty accurately say that. So it must mean he wants you to change, okay? So the location's fine. You just got to start watering the grass, okay? So he's asking you to change something because God has moved to a different place and he wants you to follow him. The problem is you're still looking at the dead flowers in the garden. And it's crazy because Naomi thought the lack was a curse. Remember when she rolled out and her family began to die? Ruth 1:20, she said to the people when she came home, she said, don't call me Naomi. That's not my name. You need to call me Mara. And that name meant bitter and cursed. She's like, don't call me by my name. Call me cursed because God's left me. But you see, what she didn't realize was that God never left her. He just changed locations with her. And it's funny, one chapter later, the story begins to turn up. And in Ruth 2:20, it says, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be the Lord. Oh, her story changed now. Blessed be the Lord, because he has not forsaken his kindness for the living and the dead. See, just a minute ago, she was saying, I'm cursed by God. Now she recognizes her eyes were open and she realized that lack, that famine was the best thing that could have happened to me. It's the best thing that could have happened to the entire nation. Why? Because God has not forgotten me. He's just taken me on the scenic route to my destiny. You see, this man that you've met on that field, Boaz, he's a relationship to us. He's a close relative. God's brought us the long way around to bring us to the place he needs us to be. And your lack needs to lead to change in your life. So I don't know what it is. If you're in the wrong spot, you need to start looking somewhere new, or you're just doing the wrong thing. Let's stop that real quick. Maybe you're not doing the wrong thing. It's just time to do a new thing. Because maybe the problem wasn't your fault. The problem's just there to get you to change, to do something new. Right? I don't have to ride my car rough to make it need an oil change. You just got to use it. So when you're using your life, what worked yesterday may not work today. God's leading you to change. She thought she was cursed, but she was really blessed. And it all happened because she was with the right people at the right time. You see, when you find lack in your life, that's God nudging you on. And the funny thing is you begin to notice it when you're around the right people. When you're around the right, and I know, generic preacher point, find the right friends. But it's so natural we forget it. It's so normal we discount it. See, the only reason Naomi was blessed was because she got hooked up with Ruth. And the only reason Ruth was blessed was because she got hooked up with Naomi. Boaz said, hey, I heard about you, Ruth. You're with one of my relatives, and you treat her real good. You didn't leave her when everybody else left her. When she had the biggest need, you were with the right person at the right time doing the right thing. And it's funny because it's that relationship she had, that friendship she kept with a righteous woman that caused her life to be blessed, that led her to the right place. It is true. It is not what you know, it is who you know. And we can whine and complain about that and the $40,000 you gave to that university to get that education, but sometimes it is a matter of having the right relationships at the right time. And that's not a knock against education because I'm about ready to drop some money too, okay? So, but I am saying this, is that God's never called you to do life alone. So if you're going to do life with somebody, pick the right bodies to do life with. Boaz answered in Ruth 2:11 and 12. Boaz said, it's been fully reported to me. I know people that know people. Everything you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you left your father, how you left your mother. She got rid of the unbelieving family. Don't take that one too far if you need to. And he says, how you left your father and mother in the land of your birth, and you've come to a people you did not know before. The Lord repay you. Why? Because of the relationships she had. A full reward given to you by the Lord God of Israel, whose wings you've come to for refuge. So when you look around, are the people that you're with where you want to go or going where you're going? What people do you surround yourself with? And are they lifting you up or leading you astray? Because if you're around the right people, it'll lead you to the right places. Because people travel in packs. And if you find yourself without one, then my friend, you need to find one. And then it all comes down to the fact that there is no perfect plan. And this is where we get jacked up. God, send me the perfect man. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Now, I'm not saying you need to settle, you know, drop Mr. Right for Mr. Right now. I'm not saying that. But I am saying, if you're waiting for everything to line up, good luck, okay? Not going to happen. Your perfectly detailed five-year plan is a joke, okay? It's a good idea, but hold it loosely. Because there's no such thing as perfect plans. There's only such thing as perfect faith. And when you recognize you're never going to make the perfect decision, you're free to make a decision. It's been said that you can only steer a moving boat. So if you're not moving, then God can't direct you. You know, it's funny because as we were talking, some of the ideas that Ruth and Naomi had were really bad ones. Like the trip to Moab, like God, there's like two people in the Bible where God's like, they will never be blessed. And the people where they went is one of them. Like, you just don't go there, right? It's the wrong side of the tracks. And it was not a very good idea, but it was the idea. And God used it. And then, like, that whole thing with Naomi saying, hey, hit up Boaz at midnight. Kind of shady. Not going to preach that in the youth sex series. But it was the idea. And their integrity kept them righteous. But it was the best they had going for them. And they went with the best idea. And they were listening to God, and they had faith, and they kept their heart close to God's heart. And God, as they moved forward in an okay plan, God began to direct them and change and correct their course. Sometimes you just gotta decide, do I do this or do I do that? I don't know. They're both good ideas. Just do one. And if it doesn't work, do the other. And if they're both terrible, I don't know. Think of something else. Just do it, you know? I'm not, and this is, and don't take this too far to where it's like, Pastor Richard said I could do whatever and God will catch me and I'll be all right. I'm going to Vegas and getting a tattoo on my forehead. It says 666. Yow! Don't do that. Don't do that. I mean, God can use it. I don't know. Somehow. But I'm not saying that. I was supposed to marry the girl I was dating in high school. But I didn't. And then I was supposed to stay single and be a missionary to Africa. I don't like mission trips, okay? And then I was supposed to go to seminary in Chicago. But that never happened. And I ended up here. But you see, I began to move forward on each of those plans. And as I moved forward and as I prayed, as I was making decisions and phone calls and talking to people and seeing what God had for my life, as I went forward in those plans, God began to change and he put lack there, so I went over there. And then he dried up that well, so I went over here. And all as I was moving forward, as I was on this way, he said, I want you to take the long way around here. And I end up to the place where I'm at now, and I've never been more blessed before because I've just decided that done is better than perfect. I leave perfect to God, right? Because that's not my lane. I jack everything up, okay? If I'm going to put a piece of furniture together, it's going to happen twice. Technically three, if you count the time I have to take it apart, okay? That's just the way I do things. I like I said, I'm not advocating bad decisions. I am advocating decisions made in faith as you listen to God. There is no great victory without great risk. And I would much rather fail greatly at splendiferous things for God, succeed at doing a whole lot of nothing. Faith always has a certain level of risk that must be taken. Our life will be filled with pain, and I wonder if that's why he is the great physician. And when you understand that God can move through our lives, even in mistakes, then it takes a sting, because failure is only failure when you quit. Failure is not failure when it doesn't go like you expected, because that's the famine in Moab, and that's the attempted time where Ruth was trying to snuggle up to. I mean, that's like really embarrassing, right? I mean, have you ever gone in for a kiss and you're like, and you? Like, that's exactly what happened, right? She's like, hey. He's like, I don't think so. Like, embarrassing. But it worked out anyway in the end, right? There's this moment in the book of Acts where the disciples are trying to figure out where they're supposed to preach. And I love it because it's like they're hitting a map saying, I want to go here. And it says the Holy Spirit forbade them. Like, why you got to do that, guy? I just want to tell something about Jesus. Why are you going to tell me no? That's jacked up. But they were doing something. And every no meant their yes is somewhere else. Because God always has a yes. And God always has provision. If you haven't gotten it, that's because it's not there. You just look somewhere else. And maybe that's why faith and works go together so well. Because your faith is waiting for your work to work. So I don't know what you've been waiting on. Don't wait too long, because every opportunity has an expiration date. And if you've been perplexed and confused, or if you've been disappointed, then maybe it's time to take that and give it to God. Maybe it's time to listen for God's nudges and moves. Maybe it's time to begin to look beyond and for the invisible behind it. And it's time to look for coincidences in your life. Because every coincidence is only a coincidence naturally. It's a divine appointment supernaturally. So, for all my Moseses out there, I'm Jelly. Nice to be you. But for all my Ruths out there, what? Let's do this. Let's follow the breadcrumbs. Finish up what God told you to do now and listen for the next crumb. Watch for the next crumb as he drops it before you. And just decide on it. Trust it to God and watch him do good and great things for you. If you got something out of God, let's give him praise.